Welcome, one and all, to Ladies with Gumption, episode 206, Sweet Dream and Beautiful Nightmare.
We gotta sing it, Tati.
Oh, I don't know how to sing that. I don't even know what that is. Is it sweet?
It's a Beyonce song.
Oh. Sweet dream and a beautiful nightmare.
There you go.
Thank you.
We are the Ladies with Gumption, recap DCTV in a flash. I'm Tatiana, and I'm here with...
Jessica.
And May.
And you can find us at DCTV Gumption on Twitter, ladieswgumption@gmail.com if you want to send us feedback, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com if you want to send some asks or some kind of gifts or something. And I think that is all of them. But you can find the actual podcast at Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. And, of course, Patreon, where you can make us talk about something other than DCTV, which will soon be all we talk about because there will be no more DCTV, for a low, low price of like $10 a month. We recently did You Season 4 Part 2. We've done Cocaine Bear.
Four.
Huh?
We did the whole Season 4.
Yeah, that's right. We did the whole Season 4. There was Part 1 and Part 2 in there. We'll do popular Netflix series, et cetera, HBO Max shows, MCU, whatnot. You can find that at...
Us to watch if May will hurry up
with The Last of Us.
Yeah,
I'm on episode, I'm gonna start episode 4 this weekend, so
okay.
Yay! I'll probably have it finished hopefully before the end of this coming week. So,
in the news department, we have heard that a Clayface is coming, someone pitched a Clayface to DC. Like James Gunn, DC Universe. I literally don't remember who it was, but it was someone that would be good at Clayface.
Mike Flanagan.
It was Mike Flanagan. Okay, yes. So always good if Mike Flanagan is pitching something. We like to hear that, I think. What do you think, Jessica?
We got like double Clayface news because didn't they say that he would, or looking at him to be like the villain in the second Batman movie?
Mm-hmm.
In Pattinson-verse. And then also a feature film based on Clayface. I don't know if it's, like, the same news and someone's just, like, a little off on where he's coming or what. But I'm curious to see how they would do him.
Right.
I'm curious, too. I guess, like, Mike Flanagan, I think horror, obviously. So a horror Clayface movie, I would be down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also down with a horror Clayface movie. I guess I'm just always, like, every version of Clayface that I see is, like, the reformed Clayface, or not really reformed, but, you know, like, you're like, aw, Clayface.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you know? Or even not, like, even if he's not, like you know, flamboyantly into theater like that. I think in the Batman run that I read, it was also kind of like, I'm emo because I, you know, can't do the acting that I want to do. So... So I don't know. We'll see. I feel like I would be defending Clayface. I would be like, no, Clayface is right. So we'll see.
It would be interesting if they did like, because I'm thinking of the Batman animated series version of Clayface, like when he first sort of becomes Clayface and everything's just like awful for a long time. I don't think he was ever reformed there, but I can't remember.
I did not see the Batman animated series, so I cannot speak to that.
Really?
I know, it's crazy. Crazy. In other news, the beautiful Nicole Maines is in Yellow Cat season 2. We get to see her in Lottie's Cult, if you're into that. If you're wondering what happened to Lottie or who the fuck is Lottie Matthews, season 2 will reveal that for you, and Nicole Maines is part of that storyline. And she is great. She also was in this week's episode of The Flash that we're going to talk about, and as Jessica just noted, was catching shit from transphobes on, like, the Instagram live and shit. So they suck, and we hate them. What else would you like to say about that, Jessica?
I think it's really, you know, because she's been a character in this universe for, like, 5 years. But like her debut or her story on The Flash, which had nothing to do with her being transgender or anything like that. It was just a straight, if you had never seen Nia Na before, a straight episode about her Iris journalism dreams. But then somehow on Twitter, you know, there's like, oh my God, the Flash has turned full, blah, 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 blah. With people talking about like Nia being transgender and Nicole and all this other shit. And it's like, she didn't just start being transgender. She's been here for years. And it's, mm-hmm. it seems like the only, like they're only making a big deal about it now because of Nicole, and has nothing to do with like the actual story, but it's just very, you know, it, like it's, this is supposed to be like a good thing for like fans and fan to be able to see a character back from another show. So the fact that she's getting like a lot of transphobes from within the fandom for it, I think is kind of sour for mm-hmm. something that yeah. was fun and should be fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like goes to show like what kind of fandom the Flash fandom is in general, outside of like certain groups, obviously, but like just the hatred. And it's even more annoying because like the Flash account was just like, we don't have, you know, we delete hateful comments or whatever. I'm like, she didn't delete a lot of those ones underneath Nicole, so it's just like, whatever. These people are such assholes.
Fired, and so now they're like not. So whatever.
Yeah, I was gonna say, for me, it's also just so obvious that when they say that they're fighting, like oh, it's just like wokeness. Like I don't want it shoved down my throat. The wokeness. It's like ruining storylines with your wokeness. But like existing, just like existing while not being you is not actually wokeness. So you can't say that Nicole is ruining your life because she exists and she is on Instagram. Like, so ridiculous.
People misuse that word so much now. It's like so obnoxious.
I saw like there's this one, I can't remember what news program it was or whatever, but there's this one white lady that she was trying to like talk about wokeness or whatever, and the black journalist that was like interviewing her, she's like, can you like describe what that word means to you, just so we make sure that we're on the same page, like have the same word. And the girl just like totally fell apart, could not describe it in any kind of like legible understanding. And then like I think later she's just like, oh, I got like blindsided or blah, 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 blah. But it's like, you literally just got called out on TV for something that they say like all the time. It's like catchphrase, like you're woke, you're woke, you're woke. But when pressured to say, what does that actually mean? Mm-hmm. They have no response.
How dare you ask them to define a word that they are using? That is very unacceptable.
Right? I know what I know what it means, but what do you think it means, so that we can come to the same understanding? And that's hilarious.
Oh. And that's also great journalism. I like that. Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then I see Zachary Levi versus The Rock. The fight
it is like the real life Black Adam.
Shazam. So in case y'all did not know, poor, you know, Shazam, Fury of the Gods flopped on its little behind, and the blame game is now flying back and forth. We found out, the last that I had known was we learned that The Rock was the one that kind of, like, blocked a Justice Society of America appearance in Shazam, and Shazam post-credits was why they had to use Peacemaker characters instead, which was, whatever, still a funny post-credit scene. I don't think that we needed JSA in there, but whatever. And also that, you know, we knew already that The Rock didn't want to be mixed with Shazam at all, like not have Shazam in Black Adam, a movie that flopped and no one watched anyway, so who cares? and then what happened? Because that's the last that I knew about it.
I just think it's like interesting that he chose a character with, you know, his rival, like, already in the universe. He's like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, what else are you supposed to do, sir? This is the battle. There's nothing else there. But I just thought it was, like, really, you know. And, I mean, I love The Rock. And I mean, I love The Rock, like, when he was, like, back in, like, WWE days. But I feel, you know, at a certain point, I do feel like his head has gotten, like, super big.
Yeah. And I feel like, yeah.
it's kind of like I think Will Smith, like, he's like, I never play, in his movies, he's always a hero. Mm-hmm. He never plays, like, a bad guy in his movies. And I feel like The Rock also has that sort of same, like, different acting level, but same expectation of him being, like, the hero in the movie. But he chose, like a villain, anti-hero, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, and I think he was, like, expecting to be the new face of DC and all that kind of stuff, and it's just not working. But I just think it's a little bit kind of funny, like, him, and, like, Zachary Levi is also not stellar.
Yeah, he's not coming across the best in this,
like,
either.
I'm not crying over Zachary Levi, but he is crying over the fact that they couldn't get... The Rock didn't want to play ball or not being able to get, you know.
But even that, like, The Rock apparently stopped him from being cameoing in Black Adam or something, yes. Right? Like, that was why he was like, oh my God.
The Rock wouldn't let Aquaman be in Shazam, and then, you know, he wouldn't let him be in his movie, and it's just very, like, schoolyard bully kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, and it also, like, shows a pattern of behavior. Oh, sorry. Because of, you know, there's that feud. There's the infamous feud in Fast and Furious between Vin Diesel and The Rock. And I was like, oh, I guess it's just like two egos can't fit in the same franchise. But maybe it's just one ego that can't get taken anywhere. Because
the common denominator.
Yeah, because Vin Diesel is just fine saying I am Groot a couple of times in the Guardians of the Galaxy. He's not trying to rearrange the hierarchy of the MCU. So...
Yeah, okay, I was gonna say that it's really funny now, like, they're going back and forth, and there's this, like, I'm not gonna call it a feud, but it's just, like, funny to see when both of these characters are basically being written out of the DCU anyway. So, like, why are you guys mad? It's over. let's move on. I don't know, it's just all kind of entertaining.
Battle of the losers.
Yeah.
It's like the reverse Quarter Quell from The Hunger Games. Like, they're already dead. Let's see if they can fight again. Anyway, so now we know. Now you know. That's where we are. Finally, and most recently, we heard that there is a Catwoman spinoff with Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman in the works. For the, you know, Elseworlds. That's what it's called. Elseworlds region of the DCU. It was like the Netherworlds? Anyway, the Elseworlds region of DC. Are we all excited? Are we over it? What are our feelings?
No, I think it's exciting. I think it'll be interesting. I do find it intriguing. Like, I don't know what it means quite yet, but, you know, we also have the Penguin, which on Patreon we talked about Theo Rossi returning to his Italian roots and being cast in the Penguin again. This Catwoman news, and even if you add the feature film with Clayface, those are all set in, like, Pattinson verse, so it feels really interesting since he's not going to be in the primary verse for the new Justice League or whatever James Gunn's carving out. They're spending, like, a lot of effort in still expanding his universe. So I thought that was interesting and curious that they're going to, you know, and this Catwoman show, I think, is another kind of, like, sign of that, too. So I'm curious to see what their overall plans are, like, whether it'll be, like, all concentrated on, the new, like, premium DCTV, or I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, for me, what that says is they feel the Batman has done so well and it is so popular that it merits all of these spinoffs that are connected to it. You know what I mean? Like, this universe that you built with just one movie that is already going so well, it can create so much more. You're launching so much off of it. So why wouldn't it be the launching pad for the DCU from now on? Mm-hmm. Why are you already cutting it out from the very start? That's what I don't get. There's no reason you can't make a Superman legacy with Robert Pattinson's Batman as the Batman in question. You know, he can meet his son in his next movie. Like, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I just think it's, like, it's great that all their stuff is coming for Batman, but I don't understand why it's not where we're starting. it's already there and it's working.
Right.
Yeah. I'm more worried that they're trying to do too much. Because we have like a Batman spinoff, you know, they're talking about Clayface set movies and Catwoman spinoff. There was something else, right? I'm missing one. But Penguin? I feel like Penguin.
Did
I say that? Oh no, there's Penguin, Catwoman, and the GCPD one, right? Or is that off the table now?
I think that went away. Or okay. At least last I heard it went away.
Okay, so it's not as much as I thought. I take it back. But I think that it will be really interesting because I feel like the Pattinson universe in general could be like the next Arrowverse-esque type thing that we get, but like, you know, premium. It's like grittier, more money thrown at it or whatever. So it could be like that for DC fans. And I'm more excited about that than I am probably anything else that's coming in the rest of like the DCU.
Absolutely. So with that said, we can now move on to the meat of this episode, which is the lovely May guiding us through Wildest Dreams.
Yes. So over on The Flash, Nia returns. Yay. Nicole Maines is back playing Nia Nall, aka Dreamer. It's like she's never left. And she's trying to get to the next level to unlock another set of her powers, but there is someone in her dreams, a mysterious hooded figure who seemingly doesn't want her to unlock those powers. So Dream Iris tells Nia that it's all about control before the hooded figure lady kills her, which sends Nia straight to Central City seeking Iris's help. Iris, meanwhile, is putting the finishing touches on her Red Death article, the one that is destined to win her a Pulitzer, but she's worried that it was all preordained and that she doesn't really deserve it. When she and Nia end up in Iris's dreams, they must both decipher why Iris keeps dreaming about other jobs she could have had and what exactly Nia needs to do to get them to wake up now that she is without her powers. For Iris, Nia gets her to realize that her destiny isn't without choice and that she's been making her own destiny all along. And for Nia, Iris shows her that it's not about control at all, but about engaging with her dream powers instead. Out in the real world, Barry is worried for Iris and baby Nora, and Mark is still in denial that Keona is not Frost, but she sets him straight after he attempts to woo her by taking her to the bar he and Frost used to go to. Mark realizes Keona is right, but to move on from Frost, he must leave Central City behind for a while. Clap.
Oh, yeah, right? Joy.
Well, obviously, I feel like this is one of the more enjoyable bottle episodes. I think there's more of a engaging story and engaging characters here. I love that we get to see Nia coming in for this story and that her dream and growing her powers is connected to Iris, and also a little bit connected to their careers in the sense that Nia's trying to become more powerful and get more in touch and take her heroism to the next level. And Iris is kind of also at like a crossroads in her career and how to feel accomplished when it feels like all of her major milestones have already been like, you know, told to her. So is it because she did it, or is it because, you know, some other kind of force did it for her? I like that, you know, Nia said that Iris was one of her like her career role models, and that kind of reminded me also of like Kara and Iris's relationship and how, you know, they kind of inspire each other in journalism. So that was really great to see. I think Nia and I obviously Nicole and Candace have like a really good chemistry together, and make Nia and Iris feel like friends. I like that we got like the follow-up of the brunch, mimosa brunch, pretty soon. Although like Iris like technically shouldn't be having mimosas, but hopefully she just had like orange
juice. They were alcohol free.
I liked being in the actual dream worlds, like going through like Iris's different dreams of different lives she could have lived if she decided not to do journalism. I find it like their dynamic in the dream world was also like really cute because Iris is like, this is like a mini vacation for her, hopping around from dreams. She's just like very like relaxed and go with the flow. Like her takedown of the guy, like right after they get into the dream, she's like confused and then she turns into a badass and then she's like, okay, what's going on again? So that was kind of fun compared to Nia just being like on edge and stressed out and like looking around for, you know, bad guys everywhere. was a really like fun kind of dynamic. Really enjoyed the Captain Wes Allen, that, you know, she could be have been successful if she wasn't like stopped by Joe or like by Barry from pursuing that option. I also like seeing her at Jitters again, because I feel like in the beginning of the series, like, you know, fanboys and people gave her like a lot of crap for being a barista, but it was something that she really did love. And I like that, you know, we see if she had gone, you know, down this path and, you know, being like a barista and becoming like a manager, or possibly even owning like a franchise of Jitters, would have been something that'd be really cool too. Chester and Barry just being like spazzing out in the, you know, all the stuff behind the bar is going wrong. They don't know what to do. And then, you know, Iyer steps in as like a manager. So it's another way, each of these dreams, she's still like a leader, and has that kind of capacity. So, that was kind of nice to see that no matter what role she would have chosen, whether it was like journalism or police work or even staying a barista, she would still have like a pretty great career at that. So I thought that was really reaffirming. And then in the real world, like Barry, you know, being really worried about Iris and the baby and like trying to assemble the league, like we have to call everybody that we know to come and save my wife. It was really sweet. The evolution, because it's like Nia's story practically, so the evolution of like Nia's powers in general, I like seeing the first Naltorian dream goddess and her powers and the twist about it not being a villain, but someone trying to, you know, the first dreamer to help Nia with her powers. And it's not about control, but letting go of control and, you know, letting the dream wave, riding the dream wave and letting it take you where it needs to take you. So that was nice that the villain that they had to defeat was themselves, in a sense. So that was really cool. What else? What can I say about other storylines that aren't that? Not a lot. I felt bad for Kion. I guess I can say that. I don't know if that's a joy though. But I like in the end, when they have solved the riddle of the dreams. I like the parallels with Barry like putting his hand on Iris's like stomach and her being able to feel that in the dream world. Kind of shows us like their connection. The CGI of Nia's powers is always really pretty. There's like this like wave of blue that went over Iris when Nia decided to take the step and go into the door by herself. All of that was really nice. Yeah, overall, I just think that this was one where I felt connected. Well, I like the characters, so I felt connected to them as opposed to other bottle episodes where I was less connected and I felt like the story didn't really go anywhere. I feel like the story still kind of went somewhere, following kind of Iris's, you know, threaded storyline of the map book, even though I'll have stuff to say about that and the not so great joys too. At least still felt like it was connected to the overall story, and the promise of maybe like Nia and Iris doing more stuff together, or, you know, following up with each other, because I do feel like Iris is like a girl's girl. And so for her to have all these nice, beautiful, relationships with like Ryan, with Kara, Alex and Nia now, I wish we could see more of it on screen, but I guess it's nice to know that she's building a girl group of her own and that those relationships will carry on even though we're not going to be able to see them. So.
Absolutely. I pretty much agree with that. Like, I really enjoyed the entire Nia and Iris plot. I said this on the podcast, on the Flash podcast already, but I feel like you can tell that Nicole had to have input on her storyline, her lore, her backstory. We know she's written a comic, or she's writing Dreamer comics for DC, and I feel like you can really feel that influence here, because never in the history of The Flash has a character come in with so much, like, legitimate lore about their powers, about their backstory. You know, like, it's just so, I'm watching a different show right now.
And that's what I, like, when I, we were talking, like, last week about, you know, predictions, I was like, I hope that they are consulting Nicole, and that she can, like, fill in some of this story. It looks like they did, so that was great.
Absolutely, because, yeah, like, that was, like, this is what I wish all supporting characters came in with. Hell, this is what I wish our main characters came in with. It just brings me back to the way that they adapted the Reverse Flash storyline in season one, aka the best season and the best storyline, and that still culminated in, like, why are you doing all this? Because I hate you. End of. No more explanations. Like, okay, thanks. Thanks for that. I love that they had all that for Nicole, so that, or for Nia, so that anyone who's watching without even having seen Supergirl would understand, like, what her powers generally are, how she kind of knows the other characters, and then, like, why she would go to Iris in this moment. Like, it was very easy to understand. It was great. Okay. I also really liked how they came, like, full circle with, like, episode one Iris concerns from this season. They had kind of resolved it, but then even over the course of the next few episodes, it still felt like Iris was, like, not fully on board with things, you know? Like, maybe she's, like, a little concerned about something. It's kind of in the background that I, and at some point, I was like, maybe Candace is just like, are we done yet? But this episode, you know, made it obvious that it was, like, a purposeful choice, right? And you get to see how excited Iris is about the idea of experiencing not even new things, but, like, old things, right? Like, revisiting times, like, when things were simpler, when it seemed like she had more control, when she knew, like, she wanted to go in one direction and then suddenly she was pulled in a different one, right? So she can, I can imagine how she could wake up one morning and be like, how did I get here? None of this is what I was expecting when I was, you know, however, younger. So, I thought that they did a really good job with that. And it was really nice to see both Iris and Nia leaning on each other in their respective parts of the story to help push each other forward. And they did that in a way that did not feel forced, the way that it normally does when someone's like, let me stop and give you a big speech so that now you can fight the enemy or whatever. I thought the design for the original Dreamer was really cool. And there was indeed, like, did not know who it was. You know, like, there was actual mystery built up about who it was. More so than, like, Red Death and just in the previous arc.
I thought it was going to be, like, another version of Nier or something.
Right. So that was really cool. I really did like their chemistry. Even though we didn't get enough of it, I did like concerned husband Barry Allen, my favorite brand of Barry Allen. So that was good. I like Keown more and more, like, every week, and I feel real bad for her, and I'm glad she stood up for herself, and I'm glad that those extras got lines and therefore got paid more money. Even though I was, like, cringing inside when they were being like, yeah, you tell him, and, like, get out of here. I was like, shut up.
That's me.
But also, yes, collect your coin. Right. And tell Mark that he's a piece of shit. I totally agree with you. So
at the end, at the dinner at, or the breakfast at Joe's house, when he knocked on the door and everyone was like, hey.
that was actually funny. That was genuinely funny. Like,
they were like, I regret telling that you're part of our family now.
Yes, exactly. that was super funny. And then when Keown freezes everyone's food, which, rude, and even, like, the mimosas or whatever the hell it is, the drinks, and they give her, like, the group hug. The group hug was actually really cute, and then Iris even put her fucking head on Keown's shoulder, and I was like, what is happening? How much did they pay Candace just for that moment? Like, Candace was so into the moment, like, she liked Keown so much, she forgot what was happening and whose shoulder that was. I don't know. But I was like, I'm all for it. I support it. Never in my life have I believed that Iris and Caitlin or Iris and Frost were friends. This is the only moment in the entirety of the show that I've ever believed that Iris and a character played by Danielle Panabaker are friends. So there you go. That's
I had that one chat, and so they're solid now. You know?
Exactly.
I quite like this episode. Also, it was unexpectedly pleasing. In that I did not have to, like, even during the Keon scenes, I was like, I'm not even gonna look at my phone. This is, you know, semi interesting. I really liked the fact that Amy was back and that she got to interact mostly with Iris throughout the episode. And like you guys said, you know, they have really good chemistry together. I like that they're both, like, they can both sort of understand each other on a journalistic level, but also Iris can understand things on a power level because she deals with that all the time as well. They seem like they really have a natural friendship, even though in universe they only met, like, at one brunch a month ago or something like that. But just the fact that that continues to happen is really nice. Like, you know, Nia talking about, like, Iris's story about Cicada and how then she wrote the story. I was like, oh, that's so cute. Also, nice shout out to season 5. And just, like, the dreamscape was really nice. I actually was so into, like, Iris's different jobs that I wanted her to have more. Like, what's next? the jitter scene was really cute. Chester and Barry just kind of, like, not knowing what to do and panicking was really funny. And then that cute little, like, Barry always offering to get Iris cheese fries and her just like, yeah, that's great. Also super cute. Nia being stressed out the whole time was a nice, like, contrast to Iris's sense of freedom. And I do like the story connection as well to not only just, like, episode 1 of season 9, but I feel like a sort of a callback to season 1, because even if Iris didn't always know her future, a lot of the stuff that's happened to her, including, like, marrying Barry, you know, doing this, doing that, has been told to her since, like, the end of season 1 at least. And I feel like she was, even back then, sort of resisting the idea of destiny because she still wanted to make her own choices. Because I feel like there was a moment in season 1 where she find out she marries Barry in the future, and then she's like, no, I'm gonna make my own choice, I'm still gonna marry you, Eddie. And we're all, like, laughing inside because that's not true. But still, like, she wanted to make her own choice, and it kind of, like, circles back to this moment. So I really like the line that Nia tells her about, like, destiny being a culmination of choices, and that it's not, like, actually preordained for you, you've been doing this for a long time, and then, like, everything that's just happening now is just what's been going on, like, what's been set by you from the beginning. So I really love that, because I feel like a lot of times with destiny can be like, it's happening because it's destiny. So people, or, like, either relationships or jobs, like, there's no work done within the writing to justify it. But I feel like here it is very much justified, because Iris has made those choices day to day, every season up to this point. So I really like that a lot. I really like the Naltorian original dreamer. I felt very, it had a lot of Buffy vibes, like the original Slayer storyline there. So I really like when that was revealed, because it's like, I've been trying to tell you this whole time, but you just keep resisting me. So I'm really glad that Nia took Iris' advice and decided to, like, not control the situation, and instead, like, actually step into the spider door, which I really like the callback to her, how, like, her mom died, basically, and having that be something she has to, like, walk through, and, like, another fear she has to get over as well. So I really like both storylines for Nia and Iris. They both made a lot of sense. They both intertwined really well. Just seeing the different versions of what Iris could have been also is really nice, because I did like both of those scenes. And just, like, I also like the fact that, like, even though Cecile technically could have been at CC at the police station, she wasn't, and Jitters, but she could have been at, like, the police station, but she wasn't, which was nice. And that, like, you know, Allegra wasn't at the police station, but, like, all of that was great. I did like the fact that, like, Mark realized that Keon is not Frost. Like, he finally got it in his head, because I feel like this has kind of been dragging on for a while, so he finally understood. And I was surprised that he decided to leave, but I was also like, oh, okay, so I guess we get a break for a little while of Mark, which is fine, because I feel like he never really felt like he was part of the team anyway, so it's like okay that he's going away. So yeah, even like it's like a tiny moment, but and during the scene when they were having dinner at the end at Joe's house, when like Keon freezes everything and like Iris is like tapping her glass really sadly. Like, oh, there's my lunch. So yeah, it was like a solid episode all around. It was very enjoyable, and I feel like it really tied all the storylines together in terms of like Iris' storyline especially, and it was a clever way to bring in Nia and to make her feel like a part of this world, but also like if we left her at where we left her at Supergirl, we also get to have like a follow-up with her powers and seeing what she's gonna do next. So that was really nice. So what did not spark joy?
You know what, before I say that, like when you're talking about like Nia and Iris's like heart to heart, I feel like that felt like a heart to heart between two friends and someone actually needing advice and someone giving good advice versus what we got on 906, which is two actresses that are friends whose characters are not that much connected. And the just like the advice was like, okay. So that was definitely a lot better. Also, second thing, I forgot that today is April 1st. So I think the Catwoman thing is a lie. but just putting that out there.
No!
I definitely was just like scrolling and my brain was on autopilot and it was like, okay. And then I was like, wait a minute. I know what day it is. So just FYI. But what did not spark joy? I mean, there are so many just like jump scare every time like he cuts like Martin Keown. And the story that they were crafting for that, like the first one when, you know, apparently they're honing in on her frost powers now. And then she accidentally spills something. It's like, oh, okay. I don't like shirts anyway. I'm like, who the fuck says that as like an actual line? Like, why is he so corny? Like, what is this? And then we found out like, and then her reaction to it was like, oh my God, this is like really weird. But then we find out it was a dream. I was like, oh my God, thank God. Whew, I can breathe now because that was like a little bit. Like,
it was really awkward.
It was so awkward. So that, I mean, at first you could say it was like kind of cute, like when he woke up and he's like, oh my God, I was dreaming about her and she's like there. But then that quickly wore off with the fact that I don't know how many more times this girl can say it. I like trees. I like plants. I want to be in the sun with the nature. Before they get it, because you know he kept taking her to all of these places that she didn't want to go to, she didn't want to be at, and you know by the time they got to like the bar, and he's like, you know, and he's also super corny with his like freaking chill train, whatever. But him dismissing like her ideas of wanting to go to the arboretum or wanting to be with like trees, and she's being super nice about it. I think she let it go on for way too long because like why, like how many things on his bucket list did she do for him? And then the one time she's like, I want to do this, and he's like, no, let's not do that, it's boring. It's like, why are you just dismissing everything that she says? And I feel like he should have caught on to the fact that he was trying to turn her into Frost. Like, it's not that hard. Like, clearly she did not want to do or enjoy anything that you were doing. The bar scene, I agree, it was like half cringe and like half like step in for the audience to be like, you are dumb. What are you doing, bro? This is super weird. Them having that argument in the middle of the bar, I thought was also really weird. And the fact that the whole bar was like watching this go down. So I was very, you know, it did bring me a lot of joy that he decided to go somewhere else. I don't know why I was forced to watch it. Why was I forced to watch him realize the same thing that he's been realizing ever since she got there, that she's not Frost? It feels like a repeat of a story that didn't need to be repeated. And I kind of feel the same way about the crux of Iris' situation being like Destiny versus you know, free choice, which I feel like it's been there for a while, but honestly, I would have wanted, and what I had in my mind was a journalism focused story, like Nia dreamt about, you know, a villain or a murder mystery, and it was in Central City, so that's why she came to Central City, and they hunt down, you know, or uncover this conspiracy or whatever, to, you know, like a journalism story. Two ladies in journalism doing journalism shit, with Nia being Iris's, you know, superpowered side, same status person, I don't know, partner, versus like Barry or somewhere else. So like Barry's like, you know, not around or something like that. I would have been fine if it was some outside force that was keeping them in the dreams and not like Nia's like powers. I do like the fact that, you know, it was focused on Nia's powers, the way that they developed the story around Nia's powers. Because I do agree that if you don't watch Supergirl, then for those people, this is a nice story to introduce them to Nia and to broaden their like scope of the characters. But I mean, it was a good story, but I feel like it's also like a plot point that we've seen not only in the series for Iris, but also in this season for Iris. And so I would have liked for her to, you know, have fun, like investigate, like an investigation storyline would have been really fun with the two of them. So even though I like the story, I feel like they could have done something else. And also, like, Cecile, like, the only thing she did was walk out with Barry and then walk back in with Barry. And I'm like, well, we didn't need you. I didn't need you to feel, you know, she couldn't feel anything with me and Iris. But as soon as the Naltorian dream goddess came in, she's like, oh, my gosh, I feel a very nice presence in here. And, like, that was supposed to tell, like, thank you. Like, no shit, Sherlock. Thank you very much for your contribution to this episode. Goodbye. But, yeah.
Oh my god.
Wow.
That was the buzzer for my feelings.
What?
But yes, I mean, I totally agree about it. It could have been a different storyline, especially like I understand the idea of having something that appears scary, but really like you were the one scaring yourself all along, right? You're the one scared of the future, or you're the one scared of losing control, or whatever. So like then it actually turns out to be, you know, the presence of an angel. But I think that they could have done this exact storyline with Nia be foreshadowing or foreseeing or dreaming about what the next villain is going to be. You know, and actually having it tied together in that way. I feel like the interlude episodes are dumb, like, as a concept. Like, so many episodes could be filler episodes or be interlude episodes and still be moving the pieces of the story in the background. You don't have to be like, this episode is story. This episode is random character moment. Like, they can go together. You can be more than one thing. So that is dumb to me, and it should have been not just, like OG Dreamer could have appeared, but not have that be the thing that drives Nia to Iris. Because, like, that was very musical episode with Darren Criss being like, I just feel like I need to teach someone a lesson today. And that is going to be... Barry and Kara. Like, Dreamer was like, you know what? Nia needs a lesson. But you know who else needs a lesson? Her brunch friend, Iris West. Like, okay. So that was a little bit like, okay, sure. And you're right, Jess, that it's like, we've seen this already. We don't technically need to see it again. We could have other developing realizations. So and that's the same thing, like I felt like it was more natural, like, they made it work with the writing or with, like, the atmosphere and also, of course, with Nicole and Candace in that half of it. But the one that did not work for me was Mark and Keone. Because I could have sworn Mark already realized he was trying to turn Keone into Frost and he should stop that. Like, why aren't we doing it again? Like, I thought that this was really going to be, even though I hated it and I was like, please don't do it, this is so gross, him trying to fight the fact that he really does have feelings for Keon, you know, and then, like, them, like, maybe seeing if they could go on a date, but whatever reason. Like, maybe they can't because Frost hangs between them or whatever. But instead, like, it literally was, like,
funny if they actually did stuff that she wanted to do and he was trying to force himself to like it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, instead of, like, just trying to force her to do things she didn't want to do, which has been her entire existence so far, when he was trying to force her to die so that Frost could live. So anyway, so yeah, that just felt so, I was so uncomfortable watching them the whole time, and Mark just seems so dumb that he wouldn't get what he is doing, or that we're supposed to be positing it as some kind of revelation for him, like, oh my god, I'm trying to turn her into Frost? That's so crazy! I can't believe I just did that last week, too! Also, last week ended with them being like, well, she's not really a meta, but she's also not human. Like, what is she? And then we just were like, okay, cool, we don't care what she is. We're gonna now move on to this weird, sublimated attraction storyline. So, I don't know why they did that. I thought we were gonna spend this episode figuring out what she was. Because I remember us talking last week, like, oh, well, I guess it was like kind of on the cliffhanger, so we have to wait for next week to find out. But then they were like, no, there's nothing to find out. We just stopped. We're like, well, she's not that. The good news is you don't have cancer. Okay, but what was the bad news? What do I have? We don't know. We don't know. We'll tell you next month. So, whatever. I'm trying to think what, yes, Cecile, Lord, baby Jesus. First off, when she, like, couldn't feel anything, like, further, like, at one point she couldn't feel things. I was like, yes, good, stop feeling things, Cecile. But then she was touched by an angel, and she was like, oh, I felt the calming presence. Like, you guys just don't understand. It's the best presence. I was like, oh my god, shut up, please. Go visit Jenna. So, I hated it. I hate everything.
Like, this happened on, like, a weekend when she was not there. Like, I feel like they could have had.
So, yeah, that was so, like, unnecessary. Like, I just don't feel like she adds anything to the storylines. If it's about her and her powers, and okay, sure, even though I don't really want to watch it, like, I understand. But, like, why is she just coming in to be like, I felt this. You know what? You may have realized it was a good person, but I just felt that it was a good person, and that is more important. It's like, okay, thank you. So, yeah. Anything else? Go, Mark, good riddance. I'm glad that he left. I just don't know if he is leaving for however long. I will never know why he was brought in. Like, he was up to series regular for what reason? He has provided nothing in the storyline. Like, literally, the one thing that he did in this storyline happened last season, which was create Keown. So, we don't need this. He could have just never come back. He could have gone on that trip to, like, bring her tacos or whatever it was that he did, and then just left for good because Frost was gone and the season would be better. So there you go. May, please speak.
Beautiful. I completely agree about Mark. I feel like when he announced he was leaving, I was like, wait, weren't you supposed to be in every episode? I'm so very confused. I guess, like, the one thing that I can appreciate about this guy is, like, at least the actor tries with what he gets. But I still find it really comical that this new guy, new character that, like, really nobody cares about, let's be honest, has gotten several episodes to pretty much try to move on from Frost. While, like, the fact that Caitlin is dead and still nobody's, like, cares, you know? And again, I'm not a Caitlyn stan or anything. I just feel like in the last season, for what is an OG character, has just been erased. And, like, this character who has just shown up, what, last season and a half ago and has not been crucial to really anything, is, like, the one given time to express his feelings about Frost being gone. It's just, I would have never seen that coming. And I just feel like it's just generally bad writing, because I feel like we could be spending this time actually learning more about Keown as a person, her powers. I don't understand her powers. Like, I saw her free stuff. I'm like, is she Frost? You know, it's like the same thing. So unless they expand on that, and I don't care whether they do or not, but, like, at least if you're going to have her be a new character, you should maybe spend time on her instead of, like, on the person who wants to be with her or wants to pretend that she's another person entirely. Something that was really weird. Cecile, there's always, like, a line that tends to be repeated with her in maybe every other episode where she, like, senses something and then she's like, something, something, isn't she? Aren't you? Blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, you don't need this. It's just like being spoon-fed information, and it's just like really obnoxious at this point. And I feel like that this episode specifically, even though she didn't really get a lot to do, thank God, but like it was very sort of peaceful in a way. And then you have her acting, and it's just, it takes me out. It's very distracting. And
Speaking of being taken out, but in terms of acting, like, I shouldn't, like, I'm like, I'm not trying to be a hater. I don't want to hate on people. But Allegra and Chester, for this episode specifically, like, with Iris and Nia, like, potentially about to die, and Iris's baby, they were very much no, that's kind of awkward, man. I sure hope they don't die. Like, what?
I'm like, can't you at least do something, pretend like you're helping, like, their fever's spiking? That means they're hot? Is there no cold?
Yeah, Allegra was patting Iris's head.
Like, can y'all please up the urgency? Like, what is going on? Like, would you compare this?
They didn't even go out and try to find Barry. They're just like, oh, what's that?
Yeah. Like, if you compare this to the musical episode when Barry and Kara were in their comas, like, it's night and day the way that people were concerned. People were running in and out. People were trying to figure out what was going on, you know, trying to engage with Darren Criss. And then here they're like, I can't wait till this episode ends and they come back.
I feel like I would have preferred them to cut to Barry trying, like, calling everybody he knows and the Arrowverse, like, hey, I need your help or whatever, than, like, focus on Allegra, because I'm like, you guys did nothing.
I swear to God, because, like, every time someone has, like, died or left, they're like, you know what, maybe we should further our relationship. I'm like, now that they're, like, pissed in the lab, like...
Like, no, exactly. That's like, you thought they were going to be like, we might lose one baby tonight, but we can make another one.
And then at the end where, like, they're in their label group huddle or whatever, and I think Chester was, like, he's either fanboying out or whatever, and Allegra's like, he's a little weird, but I love him. Like, it was something like that. It was just so, like...
Yes!
Like,
that's why?
Why
I
just,
like
it. They have such good chemistry. Every time I, like, even...
She's comparing him to Brainy. That's what it was.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. Nia's, and now I miss Brainy even more, was so much more natural than, like, anything that, like, we're doing.
Yes! They're so weird. Like, even, like, their little hug. It's like, oh, what do we do? I'm just like, I don't know, but you could leave. Like, you two together, it's just, like, when you put... And this shows... Even like when Brandon talks about the show in general, I don't feel like he likes even being in those scenes, because like you can see the difference when Chester's interacting with Barry Iris. Like even the dream Chester in Jitters was so much different than like Star Labs Chester in the real world.
You could tell that they were having fun. Like that was not Barry, that was Grant, like all day in that scene. You could tell that they were having fun in that scene.
Yeah, and it was really fun. I feel like he gets to be, like, interactive and interesting, and then he's, like, stuck with Allegra, and it's just so dull. You just want the scene to end immediately, because it's, like, and I dread next week, because, like, apparently they're having, like, some conversation or whatever. It's going to be super awkward, so it's already in my no joys. But, yeah, it's just, like, they don't really further their relationship. Not really. Like, there's nothing deep about their relationship. So at least they could have done something like that if they're going to be stuck together and not have the focus beyond, like, Barry worrying or whatever. But at least there was, like, little of them. Little of them and Cecile in general. So that was nice. What did our listeners think of this episode?
We did get a little bit of that.
I want to say that I thought that West Allen and Jitters was super cute. I think Barry's like flirting with Iris and like he wouldn't go out later.
Oh my god, yes! I totally forgot.
Like that's vacation mode. She's like, I would love that. World about their second dreams. But I should add that to my likes and to my dislikes. Allegra and the other CCC people in Iris's nightmare, like talking shit about her, winning the Pulitzer, being bitchy. Didn't like that.
No choice.
Yes. That was just Iris's insecurities, though. That was not the reality.
For that.
But no, I definitely, like, Barry, like, Jitters Barry was iconic. That was so cute. I love that West Island.
She popped out.
You lost her.
Yeah, I got too excited. I got too excited.
West Island made Tati so excited.
I had to leave.
It was
like, there's something else to say. Anyway, so here's some of the feedback. We have Sonia. This was a pretty good episode. Well, the Iris and Nia plot, because WTF was that Mark and Keown storyline. I'm glad we got to see Iris's hair and locks for the whole episode. I didn't care at all about Mark and Keown, but his weird dream where she spilled on his shirt and he took it off after saying no worries was hilarious. And then poking fun at how stupid it was that he's always shirtless. Okay. Speaking of Mark, I hated how he tried to force her to be more like Frost and didn't allow her to be herself and made her feel like what she likes is stupid. That man is a walking red flag. I agree. I loved seeing Iris and Nia interact this episode, how they show different aspects of Iris's life through the dreams, how she originally wanted to be a cop, and how she used to be a barista. Like seeing the newspaper article that eventually wins Iris a Pulitzer. I hope that's not the big article she was talking to Barry about, because how did Barry not know she was writing about the Red Death? That's pretty obvious. I forgot I had a whole rant about that. I was like, how is that the article that wins the Pulitzer? Please. That is so ridiculous. She has so many better stories that she could write about. Like the Mirrorverse.
Storyline. Yeah, or Mirrorverse. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, like, whatever. Like, and if she had, I guess if they had posited it as, like, how she discovered that the Ryan Wilder was not really herself and was actually being impersonated by another person in another dimension, whatever, like, then it would be great. You know, like, an expose. This is, and that brings down the Red Death and puts her in jail and then discovers the real Ryan. But that was not the storyline they gave us. The storyline they gave us was, hey, what's up, Iris? I am the Red Death. Okay, bye. So anyway, whatever. Okay. It was nice to get a reference.
And she spun that into a beautiful story.
Clearly. They gave her a Pulitzer because they were like, you know what? You had nothing to work with, and yet you made it amazing. Yeah, I was riveted. Yeah. Riveted. Exactly. Anyway. I like that Iris is Nia's idol. Poor Kara. Nia was like, I like journalists that do their jobs, and therefore Iris is my career model. Anyway, I liked how badass Nia thought it was that she nearly got killed by Cicada and then got home and read an article. Iris wondering if her being a cop would help her change more lives, and if her life would be easier if she was barista than a heartbreak. Girl, sometimes I feel that way about my job too. Aww. I feel you. All the bystanders listening to Mark and Keown have this cringy conversation. Secondhand embarrassment to the max. Love the conversation with Iris and Nia about the future and destiny. I hope that Iris sees that she deserves this Pulitzer. She deserved it seasons ago, but that's neither here nor there. Yes, I agree. Barry saying that we can't live this life without you, West Allen feels. Loved Iris telling Nia to relinquish control. Yay, the reference to Brainy and Brainia. We love an OTP. I totally agree. All y'all haters that thought it was not going to last, and here they are in the afterlife. Supergirl's ended. Brainia continues. Okay. Anyway. LMAO at Nia saying she's right over there. Everyone looking at her weirdly and her being like, I'm the only one that can see her. I'm not crazy. Now we see that Keown's power is related to her emotions, but I don't care about Mark. Next episode looks really cool. Can't wait to see what happens with Barry and Iris as they're stuck in the timeline. Until next time. Woohoo! Then we have Lee. Shang. It's Shang. I was just like, hello, lovely ladies. Couldn't miss sending a feedback for this episode because Nia's here on The Flash. Oh, I see how it is. You're sending us feedback because of Nia. NC Jitters, could they not use Noonan's? Right. They had to use the exact same set and just add NC in the front, but that's okay. I think I would consider this an Iris-heavy episode, and I really like the exploration of Iris using Nia's powers. I wonder if they took inspiration from the Inception movie, A Dream in a Dream, needs a trigger to be pulled out. It was a good episode about mental health, and it hits harder for me as of right now. I did feel it was a little too simple, like it was an easy watch. I could have done away with the Frost subplot. We didn't need it. Did it count as filler? I don't know. But I did like that the spotlight was on Iris, or at least that she got more time than normal, and that she actually got to unpack her troubles. Not me scoffing at the fact that no league member answered Barry's call. Why do they do him so dirty? Right, why do they do him so dirty? They were all off-world. No, never has this many people been off-world at the same time.
That's, like, so convenient, but...
Yeah.
You know, everybody that knows anything about Nia's powers are all off-world, sorry.
Yep. And then finally, Suara. Oh my god, I love this episode so much. Candace and Nicole had such fantastic chemistry together as they led the episode. I loved seeing the development of Iris and Nia's friendship. I'm really glad that they continue the thread of Iris being concerned that she wasn't in control of her own life and not leaving it to be resolved in only one episode. Nia saying, if I remember correctly, your destiny is the culmination of all your choices. That was great. I love that. Your destiny is the culmination of a lifetime of choices. I think that's what it was. And I also love that line. This was a great script by Kristen Kim and Jeff Hirsch. Jesse Warren is a fantastic director. I loved seeing Iris go through her alternate lives and her dreams and how much her face livened up. Yes! When she saw the prospect of something unknown. Outstanding acting by Candace, as always. Love that she got to have her Loxol episode. Overall, such a standout episode in this season's roller coaster of quality. Side note, when Cecile said she couldn't feel anything at one point, I audibly said, thank God. I just looked at my laptop anytime Keone and Chilblain were on screen. It increased my enjoyment. I support you. I support you. All right, and that's what you missed on feedback.
Beautiful. Now, who do we think should be crowned Lady with Gumption of the Week?
I mean, I think obviously Nia.
Yeah. With honorable mention for Iris, but yes. Yay, Nia!
I agree. We did it!
Do we have any predictions?
Don't need to let go of control, because that is a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It really is. Struggle of life. I forgot prediction. Go for it. What are the predictions? Do you have any?
No.
It's kind of hard to predict. Do we predict that Mark will be back next episode?
Oh, God. I was he might be back at the end of the episode.
Yeah, you know what?
Final scene.
Like the synopsis for episode 8 didn't it say something about Keon getting visited by an old friend. Who do we think the old friend is Carlos Valdez Cisco Ramon? Or
I want it to be
the old friend is in someone that is not who we want it to be.
Oh my god, I didn't even think of that. I was gonna say her mom, but oh my god. Yeah, that would be awesome if it was Carlos. If it was Cisco, I'd be so freaking happy. Oh my god, I can't.
If it is Carlos, I will say I'll give it to them for keeping it a surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
But he had no outside, you know, scenes or whatever that could be spoiled. So if it is him, then that would be really cool.
Oh my goodness. Now I'm gonna be so disappointed when it's not. Why did you do this to me, Jessica?
I pick you up for the flash to let you down. It's okay.
Exactly.
I don't know what other predictions that I have.
If it's not Cisco and it's not her mom, I don't even know who else it would be. It's not like she knows anybody else.
Or it would have to be someone connected to Caitlin. I feel like if it's an old friend.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you just saw her.
Blood work.
So if he's a friend, then that's like stupid.
Blood work.
So, like, how many friends does she have? Julian? Like, I'm going to his friends
Mark.
Right now.
Mark is the old friend. He looks back.
He's returned after only, like, a week of being gone. I do hope, though, that there is a time jump, because I do want to see, like, Iris with a belly at some point. Yeah.
I still think it's weird that they just take Keon's word for it. Like, where's the prenatal, like, what... You know, now he's
where's John when you need her
appetite as indication that she actually is pregnant. Yeah. Like, you know.
I like to think that they took like a pregnancy test off screen somewhere.
Let's hope.
Otherwise. Let's
hope. That'd be very awkward if they didn't.
And then like 9 months later nothing happens.
Yep. They're like, wait a second, you lied to us.
All right. Excellent. Come back next week for our thoughts on the episode where Barry and Iris are stuck in Star Labs, and it is apparently a sitcom style episode.
Like Grant did, he actually did his job and did some promo, and he said that this was one of his favorites for the season, right?
Oh, that's fun.
So I hope that means that we actually get a sizable chunk of Barry and Iris plot, and not just, you know, some Barry and Iris, but also these other people, because I don't care
about. He called it, I think, like a more like a bottle episode, so I assume it's like 90% them and less of everybody else.
I would hope
hopefully.
So. Hopefully.
Otherwise, I wouldn't consider that a bottle episode if it wasn't. So I hope it's like more something like Flash Time-esque, I guess. Yeah, so we shall see. But looking forward to it. So catch our thoughts next week. Send us your feedback to ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Send us your asks to ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. And follow along with our live tweets at DCTVGumption on Twitter. And until next time, fare thee well, everybody.
Bye.